This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. First Financial Tax and Accounting Services provides signature support. Your number is 877-217-5757. And we start with the Honorable William Harold Billy Nungesser, Lieutenant Governor for the great state of Louisiana and a man about town in many towns. And he is with us to upgrade us on the year-end tourism situation. And he is a traveling man. And good morning to you, Governor Nungesser.
How you doing this morning?
I'm doing well. I understand you're headed for Kentwood.
Yeah, we've got a few meetings there, and then we're on our way to our last tailgate, which is Southeastern and Nichols. We hosted a tailgate at every university, we welcomed every alumni, ever went to school in Louisiana back to their university for a seafood cookout, over 2 million alumni, to get them thinking about coming back to Louisiana. So great success all over the state, and we wrap it up today at Southeastern.
And come next week, you'll be involved with the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade with the Celebration Gator Float. How did this come about?
Well, we were thinking we've got to capture the attention of the country, the world, while we're competing against every state for those tourists that are ready to travel again. And think outside the box. And a bunch of tourism folks around the state said, what gets the national attention? So we started working with Macy's, and of course, we build floats in Louisiana, so I rejected several of the drafts. I said, we need a wow factor. So we were approaching a deadline, and finally, they gave us a wow factor. The largest float ever, wagging its tail, crawling down the street, shooting confetti out of its mouth as it opens its mouth. And we are already getting national and international attention from this float, and we'll be up there passing out beads, doing interviews from stations all over the world to talk about Louisiana, all we have to offer, but also all we've been through, the hurricanes. We've come through this, and we're opening our doors to the world, and we've got a great story to tell.
Now, you travel extensively on behalf of the state. Is there any particular destination that you prefer, that you like best?
You know, every time I get to a new place, I'm so excited about the love and passion. You know, we were up at Caney Lake. We cut the ribbon on those new cabins. You know, the employees in the state park, the people from that community have such love and passion for their area. Every corner of this state has something special off, and that's what's great about my job.
Do you like New York City, where you'll be headed?
Well, you know, I get laughed at because I walk down the street and tell everybody good morning, and nobody tells me good morning back. But we'll keep doing that. We'll be passing out. They won't be throwing beads, and they won't let us rot. It's only Macy's crew and their family. But we'll be passing out beads with our logo and our website and asking them, come to real Mardi Gras in Louisiana. We have family-friendly Mardi Gras all over Louisiana, so we promote it in every corner of the state. And that's what we'll be doing that week in New York.
What about Los Angeles? Do you like the West Coast?
I just got back from there. It's a little different. We were making a pitch for a Rose Bowl parade. We had offered that we want to put what Louisiana has best to offer on that float, if accepted. Our spelling bee, our astronaut, teacher, hospital worker, first responder, show not only all we've been through, but how we have great Louisiana heroes that step up, asking for Lane Hardy to ride, perform on that parade. John Batiste will be performing in Macy's Day. So we've got a great story to tell, not only about what we have to offer for tourists, but how we come through these disasters time and time again and recover.
You'll be headed for London soon, won't you?
Yeah, our team just got back where we got a top award for our COVID recovery plan. Our Sunshine Plan, our Welcome Home Plan was actually recognized for a bronze award worldwide just recently. And we're planning trips to London, Germany. Now that the international borders back up, we've just reconnected and signed up our international market. And that was a large market for us growing by double digits. And those international visitors stay longer and spend more money, and they don't just visit one city. They see two or three states, many cities, and we've got a real opportunity to grow that market back to where it was and even bigger.
Now, some would say, Governor, you've got this great job, which you probably could keep for a long time. You're in your second term, and I would think would be an overwhelming favorite if you sought re-election and you go to all these nice destinations, both in the state and outside, and you're an ambassador, and people generally respond well to you. Why would you want to become governor?
Well, you know, we'll make that decision, Jim, next year, and I think and pray about that every day. I love helping people and doing the right thing. And we've got a lot of things in this state that, you know, a lot of people just don't get involved unless they have to. And we won't fix everything if I do decide to run and am elected, but we will try to fix everything. And putting that 110% effort forward is needed so much in Louisiana today. And our people deserve it. So when we make that decision, it's a tough one to make because you're right. I do have the best job in the world.
Now, yesterday on his show, asked the governor, John Bel Edwards, the 56th governor of Louisiana, said that he might become involved in the next governor's race if there was a candidate that he felt would be dangerous to Louisiana. And he acknowledged he felt in 2015 that David Vitter fit that mold and that that was one of the reasons why he ran. And he defeated Vitter. But I'm not sure who he's talking about. I could speculate. But if you were to be in a runoff with, say, a fellow Republican for governor, would you anticipate possible support from this governor?
Yeah, I'd absolutely welcome support from anyone. And I've had a great working relationship with this governor. He's given me a seat at the table through the storms, through the COVID meetings where we were doing conferences with the president every week. And I thank you for that. And it's allowed me to help a lot of people that can't reach the governor. So the best thing I did was commit to Jimmy Fitzmaurice, no matter who won governor. I wouldn't run against him, and I wouldn't criticize him. I'd work as a team. And that's the best decision I made for Louisiana. And I hope further governors and lieutenant governors can have that working relationship, because if they're not, only the people of Louisiana pay the price for that.
877-217-5757 is your number. Billy Nungesser is weighing the prospect of running for governor. And right now, until further notice, everything points in that direction. But we've had others on this show who've said similar things, including John Schroeder, the treasurer. We know Jeff Landry's looking at it. We hear Bill Cassidy is even exploring the prospect. It could be a crowded field.
It'll be an interesting year in politics in Louisiana, as it always is.
And it sounds like you're ready for all comers.
You know, listen, I get up every day and do the best job I can for Louisiana and the people. I love making a difference, and I got a great team of people that work in the state parks and tourism, and love what I do. And if you don't love it, get out of it.
Again, 877-217-5757 and talk at talklouisiana.org. Billy Nungesser, who travels as much or more than any public official, probably as much as the governor of Louisiana. Do you ever chart the number of miles you travel each year?
You know, I don't. I'm on my second personal vehicle since being lieutenant governor, with both of them over 100,000 miles. And I think I'm on my second or third when I travel with a trooper. I think the third vehicle, because of the amount of miles we do travel. And I don't know how they do it in any states larger than Louisiana, but I crisscross it many times a week and try to make as many events to promote those areas and events around the state.
I bet you've been to all 64 parishes.
At least several times, and every town and village as well.
877-217-5757 for the lieutenant governor. We'll talk some more with him about tourism and politics, and he is a political animal. As we know, many of us knew and loved his father, Billy Nungesser I, who was chair of the Republican Party when it was minuscule. But we'll talk more with the son, Billy Nungesser, when we return. I tell you what, I made a mistake. I broke a minute early. So, Billy, are you still there? That was my bad. You know, I've done this long enough. I should know better than know that we break at 9:18:30. But Billy Nungesser, I mentioned your dad, and I'm sure he would be proud of your success. And he was one who worked from behind the scenes. And now, of course, you are in the realm as an elected official. What is the distinction between what you saw with your father, who helped people like David Treen, and you, who are actually out there and taking what comes when you're an elected official?
Well, you know, I learned from my father of helping everyone. And he sat down. It didn't matter what party you were in. He worked for the greater good. He believed.
This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. And Billy Nungesser is in the house for another segment, the Lieutenant Governor. He's a traveling man. He'll be at Kentwood later today. And, of course, he travels almost every day of the year. And he'll be at the Macy's Thanksgiving Parade next week. 877-217-5757. And before we hit the break, we had to cut you a bit short, but you were talking about the influence your father had on your life and career. And I know you think of him every day.
I do. You know, I spent a lot of time with him during the Dave Treen years. And that's when the Republicans had to work with Democrats to get things done. And he believed in compromise and working, but not sacrificing his beliefs in doing that. But I'd love to see us get back to sitting at a table and working out our differences. And doing it respectfully, and not punishing and threatening and all the nastiness that takes part in politics today.
All right. Now, you in the past have expressed some concerns about the monuments. And Nicholas, formerly on Nicholson, now in Arizona, notes that the Thomas Jefferson statue has been evicted from City Hall and will go to a museum. This was a story in the New York Times. This is in New York where this is happening, the third U.S. president. This is happening because he was a slaveholder, and if you want to comment about that, that's fine. But Nicholas asks, beyond that, what's happened to all those statues that were removed from New Orleans?
Well, we're working right now to raise the funds to move Beauregard to a historical site, and if I get that done successfully, then I've had discussions with the mayor about getting those other monuments that she has in storage and moving them to one of the historical sites under my office as well. We need to preserve them, all of them, and put them in a historical site and not see any of them destroyed. And that's my goal, and I'm going to continue to work to do that.
It seems to be moving in slow motion, though.
Yeah, I tell you, the COVID has really disrupted a lot of things, and the storms, and raising the funds we need to move it. I'm still waiting on the final approval from City Park and the city to allow that to happen. City Park had ownership of it. So did the city. There was a lot of discussions back and forth till we got to this point, and I'm hoping to get both okays from those two as we continue to raise the money. It's over $100,000 to take that base and the statue and put it back up in a historical site. And surely that needs to be done with private funds.
Leonard Johnson, Leonard Earl Johnson, says to you, Governor, thanks for your good work. Tell us if anything is being done on building a rail connection between Lafayette and Baton Rouge and New Orleans.
Well, you know, there's a lot of those discussions going on. And I know there's a lot of people, both our congressional delegation and in state government, pushing for that. I don't have an update. I know there's also a corridor from Dallas to Jackson across North Louisiana that's been discussed to recreate rail up there. And I think that not only the passenger rail, but the improvement of the freight rail can only help increase and grow our ports and business across the state. So that's something that hopefully some of this infrastructure money can start the ball rolling and see those things happen.
Now, another question from a listener. This is Tom on Bluebonnet asking about the infrastructure bill that is now the law, and $1.2 trillion will be spread across the country, and Louisiana will get more than its fair share. Will this be good for tourism? Is it money well spent?
We've got to get the new bridge in Baton Rouge and Lake Charles and a lot of other improvements, and we've got to do it quickly. I don't know if we can do it under the state of emergency or fast track the environmental and all the red tape that takes years, because people are losing their lives monthly because of that traffic jam up, and it affects business and travel. You know, we have events throughout Louisiana where people used to drive into don't come because you can't get through Baton Rouge except in the middle of the night.
877-217-5757 to get in with Billy Nungesser before we let him go at the bottom of the hour. Then it's Mark Ballard of The Advocate. Phil on in Jefferson Terrace. Phil, you're on with Billy. Hi, Phil.
Good morning, gentlemen. And Mr. Nungesser, thank you. I think you are an example of a good public servant, and you have my support going forward. Thank you, sir.
All right.
Thank you, Phil, so much. I appreciate that.
All right. Dominic in Grand Coteau. Dominic, I think we've got you. Good morning. You're on with Governor Nungesser. Hi, Dominic.
Good morning, folks. Mr. Nungesser, the last time you were on Jim's show, did I hear you right that you said that you had doubts about the results of the 2020 presidential election?
No, I didn't say that.
I don't think he said that.
No.
No. But obviously some people in your party do at very high levels and in Louisiana. And you're a political animal. At what point does this go beyond politics and into something beyond what would be a legitimate questioning of an election?
Well, I think everybody wants to know their vote's counted, it's secure, and elections are fair. And I think a lot of people have questions about mailing a ballot to every household. I went up to Georgia to campaign in that Senate race up there. And dropping off ballots in unsecure locations, reason for doubt whether those are legit votes. So I think anything we can do to make everyone feel their vote is counted, it's secure, and it's their vote, is a good thing. And we've got to make sure that happens all over this country, because if we lose that, we lose what we stand for.
Well, the Georgia election was close, but it wasn't as close as Florida in the presidential election in 2000, more than 10,000 votes. And I don't know that there are 10,000 ballots that have been questioned as far as mail-in ballots. But are you saying, Governor, that you are against mail-in voting, that you do not like that?
No. I think it's good that elderly and people that want to vote from home, but they need to request it and verify who they are. To mail a ballot to every household is not a good thing. That takes away if six people look. I know when I walk door to door, there'd be six families registered at one home. They moved, didn't change their registration. To mail all those ballots to one home is not a safe, secure way of counting the elections. So I think we need to determine the safest way to make sure our vote counts and it's secure. And I think we all can come together and try to agree on the best way to do that.
Well, we only had 13.7% of our registered voters take part in a major election this past Saturday. That's tragic. How do we stimulate activity, people going to the polls and being good citizens?
Well, one thing I think as far as candidates campaigning, I won't lie about my opponent to get elected. I'd be worried after the election, you'd say, Billy, you lied to me. I think when people start putting things out there that are untrue, especially if you support a candidate and you hear bad things, you stay home. And we saw that in the governor's race. We see it time and time again. People get turned off by the negative, false, or fabricated stories about opponents.
Charlotte in New Iberia, you're on with Governor Nungesser. Hi, Charlotte.
Good morning. Thank you for allowing me to ask a question. Is it true that Oregon mails out ballots and their voters can only vote that way?
I know they rely heavily on mail balloting. I don't know if that's an exclusive situation. Governor, do you know?
I don't know. No, I don't know if that's true. I know they do have a pretty ability to mail in and mail out, but I don't know the exact rules there.
But they have not encountered any widespread problems, as far as we know.
No.
As you know, the president, the former president, and Rudy Giuliani and others, they don't like voting machines either. I don't know how we can have a perfect system.
Well, I think there's some checks and balances, and I'm not the guy to figure that out. There's a lot smarter people than me. But
well, Governor, we do have to roll, but thank you so much, and let's do this again soon. Thanks, Governor. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. 877-217-5757 is your number. Talk at TalkLouisiana.org. Mark Ballard of The Advocate Picayune, he is with us, and he writes a Sunday column that is a must-read every week. And in his last one, he says the passage of the $1.2 trillion Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act was a generational change in how government approaches neglected roads, bridges, drinking water systems, and other fundamental structures upon which the nation's economy relies. It was also political poison for the 13 Republican representatives who supported Democratic President Joe Biden's legislative success, addressing a long-recognized problem that Republican Donald Trump tried but failed to accomplish during his tenure as president. And as we know, this bill got very little Republican support, even though there are many projects in Louisiana, for example, literally millions, if not billions of dollars we're talking about, in a $1.2 trillion bill. If Louisiana were an average state, we'd get $24 billion. And we're more than an average state as far as the goodies, and yet every member of our delegation voted against it except the Democrat Troy Carter and U.S. Senator Bill Cassidy, who is shouting from the rafters that this is a good thing. His Republican colleague John Kennedy is steadfast in saying it's a budget buster. Mark Ballard, your thoughts about what is going on with politics trumping everything, and in this case, lawmakers voting against projects that are in the best interest of the citizens. And we hear people like Clay Higgins, the representative from Lafayette, say the bill is, quote, 9% roads and bridges and 91% socialist garbage. I think we've lost Mark Ballard, Alondra, so let's see what we can do to get him back. Mark notes that Senator Kennedy, who is up for re-election, is an opponent of the bill, and yet, of course, his colleague from Louisiana is not. Senator Kennedy is in a different position than is Senator Bill Cassidy, and Kennedy is running for re-election. Bill Cassidy is a proponent, as we know, and has gone out of his way to list all the goodies that Louisiana will get from this piece of legislation, which is now the law of the land. Now, there's another package that is in the offing that is unlikely to get the support of Senator Cassidy, and it may not even get the support of some Democrats, and that's the problem for Joe Biden. But this is round one, and this one is largely infrastructure, but yet, Mark, as you note in your column, is interesting that U.S. Representative Clay Higgins, Republican Lafayette, direct quote, 9% roads and bridges and 91% socialist garbage. Is that the case?
Well, I don't think so. I mean, he may think so, but I don't. It has a good deal of money for upgrading our roads and highways, for fixing up our ports, for expanding broadband. I mean, there's a lot of money in it for infrastructure. I think the Republican delegation, because their excuses have not been that good about why they're against it, is so it's more of a political thing, I think. They have redefined what they call infrastructure so that they can, you know, make these claims of, you know, there's nothing in it because, you know, only this amount is for roads and bridges. The rest of it is for socialism, you know, like ports.
Right. Yeah. Well, and ports, are a big part of the life in Louisiana, arguably the biggest port state in America, and yet a guy who is regarded as a moderate, the congressman who represents Baton Rouge, Garrett Graves, he voted against this, just as he voted against the investigation into the January 6th insurrection. He voted to negate the election that Joe Biden won fairly. I would say the record shows that Garrett Graves is not a moderate. He's a very conservative Trump supporter who, if the president, former president, gives his nod that something is good or bad, Garrett Graves is going to follow suit and follow the lead of Donald John Trump.
Well, yeah, he is a very conservative legislator. We've known that all along. I mean, that was what he ran on. But you also have to think about that the district that was drawn for him is, while it is moderate where you and I live, is predominantly and overwhelmingly supporters of Trump. And so he has to do that as well. And keep them up.
And he will likely try to keep it the way it is, too. I suspect that he'll try to keep North Baton Rouge out of his Baton Rouge congressional district.
I would imagine so. I think, though, what's really going to happen is what the Republican majority legislators agree on how to handle North Louisiana and whether there's going to be one congressperson or whether there'll be two congressperson, and you know how they deal with the kind of vertical the vertical configuration that gives them to that's going to be interesting to watch. If if it's one, then Graves likely will pick up a lot of the Florida parishes that he does not have.
877-217-5757 for Mark Ballard. A story involving Congress yesterday, a bitterly divided U.S. House voted narrowly to censure Representative Paul Gosar, Republican of Arizona, for posting an animated video that depicted him killing a Democratic congresswoman and assaulting President Biden. The formal rebuke, I'm reading from the New York Times account of this, of the congressman who has allied himself with white nationalists, the first censure since 2010 and only the 24th in the history of the Republic, stripped him of his committee assignments. The vote, 223-207, two Republicans, Representatives Liz Cheney of Wyoming and Adam Kinzinger of Illinois, joined Democrats in favor. One other representative, a Republican from Ohio, David Joyce, voted present. But in Louisiana, Steve Scalise, Garrett Graves, Mike Johnson, Julia Letlow, Clay Higgins, they all voted to protect Congressman Gosar, who I think it's fair to say threatened the life of a fellow congressperson. And this is not something Congress does lightly. Censure fell out of favor many years ago. In 1978, Representative Charles Diggs was censured after being convicted on 11 counts of mail fraud and 18 counts of false statements in a payroll fraud investigation. And in 1983, Representatives Jerry Studs and Dan Crane were censured for having sex with 17-year-old congressional pages, criminal offenses that would likely warrant a far more dramatic response today. So Gosar is censured, but only two Republicans, none from Louisiana, voted for this, even though he showed a video of him killing Democratic Congresswoman Cortez and assaulting President Joseph Biden. How can this be accepted in a polite society?
Well, that is a good question. But we're talking about Congress, and that's not a polite society, apparently. Mm-hmm. So, and, you know, Congress has had a history of assaults on the floor. And now, granted, not that recently, but I think it's all kind of is a reflection of the kind of the violent speech that President Trump made accessible during his 4 years and now, and this kind of this difference between between people really and their political views and the extreme differences that they have.
And as usual, Gosar is one of those fellows who likes to talk tough, but looking at him, he doesn't appear to be a really tough fellow. David in Atlanta. David, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning, gentlemen. I remember well when Republican State Senator John Hankel put pork chops on a podium in the State Senate, mean-mouthing the sports arena bill that was going to build the sports arena in New Orleans. And when the sports arena opened, and it's been a great economic boost to New Orleans, the sports arena, John Hankel was the first in line to make a speech as if he had full credit for passing the legislation responsible for the sports arena. And how unimaginable, Steve Scalise, who was shot by a political zealot madman, almost died, came within an inch of death, and Steve Scalise evidently is condoning the behavior of another crazy congressman, mocking a fellow congressperson, pretending to kill that person after what Steve Scalise suffered. Words have consequences, and hate, to some people, they will carry out these horrid deeds. We know that. Look at that Congress lady in Arizona who was shot at a town hall meeting. So there are people out there who will listen to crazy people like Gosar. And Steve Scalise is a sleaze. And I can't say on Family Talk Radio what I'd really like to say about
that. All right. Okay. Well, David's worked up.
And we get the drift, however.
And I don't think he's a sleaze because he voted against this, but it is curious that he was a victim of a violent act from a political extremist from the left. And this is serious business when a guy has a video of himself depicting himself killing a Democratic congresswoman. And of course it's the Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who the Republican Party would like to view as the spokesperson for the Democratic Party. I remember John Kennedy, when he spoke at the press club last time, kept referring to AOC, AOC, AOC. You would have thought she was president, not Joe Biden. But she is not a person who incites this kind. She's emotional about issues, but this is ridiculous.
Well, yeah, but it's talk for the most part. I mean, you know, yeah, it was. I mean, doing a meme like that was really in bad taste and should be punished stronger, I would think. But it is all talk as opposed to what happened to Gabby Gifford and what happened to Steve Scalise as well. I mean, that's I think, you know, I mean, his main comment is violence has no place in politics. But apparently that does not go to violent talk as well.
Well, and there is a man in jail right now who beat up Rand Paul, the senator from Arizona, over dispute over their yards. And members of Congress are protected from assaults by others. But in this case, there's one actually inciting this sort of thing. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. Mark Ballard of The Advocate is with us, and he's ready for all comers. 877-217-5757. Patrick in Ennis-Wald Estates. Patrick, you have the floor. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. I tried to Google that cartoon, but you can't find it on the internet. But you know, I've seen pictures of it. It looks like he superimposed like heads on another, like a Japanese cartoon. You know, we got Bugs Bunny kills people all the time in cartoons. And I get it. Maybe that's not proper, but it's such a double standard because Maxine Waters has actually called for confrontation against people.
She hasn't called for killing. She hasn't called for killing anybody.
Yes, she has.
Not for killing. She has not called for killing. She has not called for killing anybody.
You
are not telling the truth, Patrick. But Maxine Waters did call for more confrontation. Mm-hmm. She did do that. And she, of course, has been rebuked, not censured. But we have some congresspeople who, of course, bloviate all the time, and it is a new age, and now you can actually put out a video in which you, the congressperson, is killing another member of Congress, and according to the Republican Party, that's okay, with two exceptions, just two. And in Louisiana, Scalise, Graves, Johnson, Letlow, Higgins, they say, okay, I wonder what Senator Kennedy would say about this and what Senator Cassidy would. Those two have diverged quite a bit, Mark.
Oh, politically, yeah. Well, yes and no, in that that Cassidy seems to be more willing to kind of take an independent route, whereas Kennedy seems to be more following the line of, you know, the the Trumpian line.
Yeah.
And so that's a.
And you're still getting emails from John Neely Kennedy, right?
I am.
And they're very long emails too. And he's.
You mean get it, the give me money emails? I get those, but I also get emails from his staff.
Well,
who disagree vociferously with whatever it is I think I'm saying.
Well, by the way, the spending bill, the infrastructure bill that Joe Biden steered through Congress just passed, so it could have had no effect, absolutely no effect on the economy. And as I mentioned, the stock market is up almost 20% since Biden became president 10 months ago, and the deficit has come down. But here's Senator Kennedy saying, Senator John Kennedy today spoke on the Senate floor to ask Democrats to forsake their massive spending agenda ahead of Thanksgiving. President Biden's multi-trillion dollar spending bills have already led to historic inflation going into the holiday season. A lot of people, Mr. President, as well as you know, can't afford to pay 50% more to fill up their gas tanks. They can't afford to have to stop and go arrange a bank loan to go to the gas station or the grocery store. Unfortunately for Americans in my state and your state and across the country, here with winter coming on, the cost of heating homes is also going to go up just in time for temperatures to fall. As our days grow shorter, the economy landscape is getting darker. Thanksgiving's just around the corner. It's a cherished American holiday, but even the holiday that Americans observe in the order of to count our blessings is coming with new hardships, according to the New York Times, Mr. President. Interesting that Senator Kennedy is quoting the New York Times. Thanksgiving 2021, and I quote, could be the most expensive meal in the history of the holiday. That from John Neely Kennedy, voicing concern about his constituents and the nation at large as he prepares for a reelection quest in 2022, Mark.
Never one to speak conservatively. So, yeah, we're seeing a lot of that, not just from Senator Kennedy, but also from others. Mike Johnson in the northwestern part of the state, Steve Scalise, Higgins. I mean, they're basically saying the same thing. They're all calling the Democratic socialists, and you know, based on what, and then if they do want to talk to Democrats, I mean, my mom always told me that, you know, don't insult the person you want to negotiate with, but apparently that's not the way that things are going right now.
Well,
and we will be seeing this throughout. I mean, it seems to be kind of a an organized plan to undermine the president's and the Democratic Party.
877-217-5757 for Mark Ballard, Mitchell and Sherwood. Mitchell, you're on. Good morning. Good morning, Mitchell. Are you there, sir? Okay, I think we lost Mitchell. So, actually, there we go. I think we got him. Mitchell, good morning.
Hey, good morning. First of all, we're supposed to be a Christian nation. For some man in Congress to put that up, to depict, to kill another congressman, he should really be put out of Congress. All this started from Trump. This is what we wanted. We voted him in. God's going to give you what you pray for. So we reaping the benefits of nothing. Nothing. He started this inflation. That started with Trump. Look at the deficit.
All right. Mitchell's fired up, and he represents a lot of people who are with him as far as feeling that we're being let down by our members who represent us on Capitol Hill and elsewhere.
Well, and I mean, I do feel that a lot of this violent type of conversation that we're having right now, this violent rhetoric that we're having, came from Donald Trump being willing to make that sort of language accessible. And so now we say it a lot more often than we do. So the question is, you know, whether we want to allow that to happen, you know, because we do have a First Amendment and free speech, or whether we want to kind of tamp down in hopes of getting people back together a little bit.
All right. Another listener asks Mark, and Mark, of course, is not a sports reporter, but the LSU coaching search is ongoing. The Advocate has been covering it well, with Scott Rabelais writing some interesting stories. And the LSU board, of course, will ultimately have to chime in, but that's almost certain they will accept whoever Scott Woodward, the athletic director, recommends. And yesterday on his show, this is a listener, Howlin Monroe, notes that Governor John Bel Edwards on his monthly show said after he leaves office, he would like to be an LSU board member. Mark, that would be an interesting development.
I think it would be. And I wonder if he can appoint himself, or is he going to have to rely on the next governor to do so?
Well, if the next governor is a Republican, John Bel might not get appointed, I wouldn't think. But he could conceivably appoint himself, although I don't think there are any imminent openings. The next ones may not be until 2024, although there could be some in 2022. I'll have to check. But
I'll check that as well. I know that they come up on a rotating basis, and they come up about every 2 years or so. Yeah. So that'll be interesting.
Well, and John McKithen did it. But, you know, the LSU was just mentioning that this guy Mel Tucker at Michigan State might be a candidate. And Tucker, who's only been coach of a major college school for 3 years, one at Colorado, two at Michigan State, and barely over 500, he just parlayed that into a 10-year, $95 million deal. There is a lot of money in the world of college athletics, Mark.
It seems to be that way, and certainly that he was one of the leading contenders at Michigan State. And remember that Nick Saban was a coach at Michigan State that had a star behind his name as an up and comer, and so it looks like Jimbo Fisher also is getting up for a new contract, as well as the guy from Lafayette.
Yeah, a lot of people.
This has actually been pretty good. This has been pretty good for coaches.
Well, those who are not taking the LSU job are benefiting, and then presumably somebody will be hired probably at about $12 million a year, and people are jockeying trying to find out what's going on. WBRZ, to its credit, asked for a public records review of emails between the president, William Tate, and the athletic director, Scott Woodward. And they didn't get very far, but they found one, and I read it. I was amused, supposedly about this clandestine meeting at Ruth's Chris involving Woodward, Tate, and DB, CT, and CL. Well, I know about that meeting. It was Dale Brown, Collis Temple, and Carl Lucard, and it was to celebrate the naming of the basketball court at the Assembly Center in honor of Dale Brown. There was nothing, to my knowledge, discussed about a coaching search, but hey, it's interesting, and the fact that initials were used makes it sound and look all the more clandestine, Mark.
It does, and I find it interesting that we care this much about who the next football coach is going to be.
That's right, and you know, if Jimbo Fisher is hired from A&M, which could happen, he will be coming from a school that has a $13.5 billion endowment. And LSU is about $500 million. LSU has, we've talked about this before, has problems getting its alumni to contribute to the university, but has no problem getting them to contribute to the well-being of the football program.
This is true. And this has been a problem. I've heard repeated presidents at LSU complain about that. So,
well, It's going to be interesting, but I would suspect a coach will be hired immediately within a day or two or hours after LSU's season finale a week from Saturday against Texas A&M. And it could be the coach at A&M. Who knows? It could be Jimbo Fisher, who was hired by Scott Woodward at College Station and is now still in the hunt, presumably, even though he says he has no intention of leaving. Mark, we may know more next week, and we'll catch up with you, but I think we're going to have to change dates because next Thursday is Thanksgiving Day. So let's try to do it one day next week if you're free.
Okay, we'll do.
Thank you, Mark. Appreciate you. And First Financial Tax and Accounting Services provides signature support. Until tomorrow, stay safe and stay tuned.